Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, actor Don Stark tells a really funny story about saying yes to everything.
So they asked, before you came in, do you ride a motorcycle? And I say, why, yes. Yes, I do ride a motorcycle. I am an expert at riding a motorcycle. He says, good, we've got one downstairs in the parking lot. And we just want to see that you're comfortable just riding in the parking lot. So I kickstart it, I let out the clutch, and I hit the gas. And the motorcycle immediately, I drive into the back of a Volvo.
Today on the show, the amazing actor Don Stark talks about lying on his resume and telling a casting director that he could ride a motorcycle. Stay close.
Hey there, this is Don Stark, and you're listening to Story Worthy. I know where you live.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of over 9 years, thank you so much, or you're a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the show last week with comedian Murray Valeriano. Murray told a good story. It was, you know, not a hilarious story. A lot of times comedians bring funny stories, but Murray's not that funny. He had the open heart surgery at 48 years old, and not just like going through the leg open heart surgery, but like the whole breastbone broken and gone into his heart. And, you know, so it was pretty intense, and it was a very good story. And Murray has a great outlook on life, man. He is just cruising along and doing so good. So you guys go back, listen to Murray's story last week, but not today, because today I am here with actor Don Stark, and he brings forth the topic, if they ask if you can do it, say yes. And I know exactly what you're talking about because you're an actor. So you're talking about trying to check off a lot of boxes, as it were.
Yeah, you need to have special skills. And if you don't have special skills, you make it up.
And that's what is written literally on your resume. Like any standard actor, on the back of the resume, the back of your headshot, as it were. We don't even really use headshots anymore. I mean, online, but it's not like the physical headshot. But regardless, on the back would be your name, your phone number, if you were lucky enough to have an agent, and then all the roles you play, and maybe the training you've had. And at the very bottom, it says...
special skills.
And so people bullshit all the time because they want to look like they have a lot of talent.
Right. Do you wrestle? Do you scuba dive? Yeah. Can you ride a horse? Do you ride English or Western?
My dad was an actor as well, and my dad would write on his special skills, can drive an automatic or a standard car. Like that was his special skill.
Well, there you go. And today, most people don't even know what that is. It's like millennials wouldn't know that. And they couldn't read a manual on it. You'd have to go online. So life is completely different today.
It is different. But still, people will write in their special skills. Like they might even say they speak Spanish if they don't speak Spanish.
Right.
Or like I used to write rollerblading. Oh, because you know how many people need rollerbladers. You know, I mean, it's very common for them to be on the hunt for rollerbladers. It's just ridiculous.
Well, when I started out in the 70s, that was important. And actually, I did a movie where I was supposed to be on roller skates, didn't know how to roller skate, so my character had to be on the side of the roller rink when the mayhem ensued because,
couldn't be going around the rink.
Well, yeah, because I would fall down. And falling down wasn't, you know, the idea of the whole thing.
Don, you have played so many roles. Your IMDb page goes forever. And you seem to be able to seamlessly transfer from a cop to a mob guy, to a detective? Like, what's your favorite roles to play?
The one I'm playing at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, it's what I'm doing presently, because I do a lot of things from drama to comedy, and it's just the challenge of being able to do different things. I do a lot of different accents, you know, because I find that however I've been able to train myself, I moved around a lot when I was a kid. Started out in New York and then Massachusetts. I lived in the South. I lived in California.
Why was that?
In New York.
Why was that? Why were you guys moving?
Well, I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you. So,
well, wait, was it your parents were moving?
Yes, my parents were moving.
Military?
No, my dad was in the retail business, and he just moved with companies in different places, and so I think that's one of the reasons I learned to adapt quickly to my environment.
Yeah, like change your environment.
You know, had to pick up a Southern accent in order to be not the Yankee that was in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, or Houston, Texas, and then lose the accent when I came out.
Yeah.
And having to make friends, and then 3 years later, I'm living in another place. So it created this social ability to kind of be a chameleon, and to adapt to new circumstances. So
that's very interesting. I don't think I've heard anybody, with that experience, like that tangible experience, living different places. And just for fun, I'm going to throw out some of the shows that you've been on. I don't need to tell you, but my audience, because sometimes you don't hear, you don't know characters' names. Like, you're kind of a character actor, and people don't always know your name, but boy, they've seen you. And they've seen Don Stark, and they've seen you, Don, on shows all the way back to Welcome Back, Cotter, The Streets of San Francisco, Police Story, Chips, Quincy M.E. Was that it? Or M.D.?
Medical Examiner.
Oh, that's right. Cagney and Lacey, Night Court, Beauty and the Beast, 9 1/2 Ninjas, The Man and the Family, Empty Nest, Golden Girls, Elvis and the Colonel, the Untold Story TV movie. What did you play in that?
I played Dutch, who was kind of a compilation. He was one of Elvis's guys in his circle
posse,
of friends.
Awesome.
And so it was kind of a compilation of a couple different characters.
Okay, and listen, we're only in the early 90s, okay? We're not even in the 2000s yet.
I feel like I'm in my early 90s.
You,
right now.
I'm telling you, man, you also were in, of course, Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, and you were in Beverly Hills 90210, Silk Stockings, and Three Ninjas, and Maverick, and Ellen, and all these shows, Charlie Grace, Bless This House, Picket Fences. It goes on and on and on. Spider-Man, the Animated Series, which is a television series. And then you go on to do, oh my gosh, I mean, there's so many television shows, some I don't recognize, others like Diagnosis Murder and NYPD Blue, and of course CSI Crime Scene Investigation and Curb Your Enthusiasm. That's fun.
Yeah, I did a recurring role on that, and that is, it's all improv. They give you, just before you start, they tell you the elements that they want to bring out in the scene. Before that, you don't know anything about it, and you just riff.
Now, what you do know, though, is the pace of the show. So you must watch the show to get an idea of how you're supposed to fit into that group, yeah?
Yeah, but their editing is amazing. So you could do a scene that's 10 minutes long. They'll cut it to a minute and a half, and you will swear that it was written that way because of the ability that they have to put it together. So
I never knew that.
You know, the genius of them doing it is coming up with the concepts and then giving people information, letting them go, and then being able to edit it down to what works.
I did not know that. Very interesting.
I had actually asked Larry David, I said, this must be great for you, being able to do this, and he said, actually, it's easier for me to write a show
straight out.
But if I'm acting in it, I'm listening to the lines that I've written, as opposed to just being able to be, you know, present and sure. doing what he does. And
he's a genius.
Great. Yeah.
He's
yeah.
a genius. You played the same character on all three of your appearances, Stu Brody. Brody?
Yeah.
That was nice.
Yeah.
Then you hit it, man. You hit it big with that 70s show, playing the father of Laura Prepon's character.
Yeah, Bob Pinciotti.
Bob Pinciotti, right. And that, of course, was an Italian guy, yes?
There you go, my friend.
I just want to be sure.
Yeah.
I had Mark Brazil's been on the show before.
Oh, my God.
And he's stunning. And he told one of my favorite stories ever on Storyworthy. You got to go back and listen to it. I'll send you it. But it was a wild story.
Oh, Mark is great.
I mean, he's an amazing, like, his words, his choice of words was just stunning. Stunning.
Yeah, he and Bonnie and Terry Turner and...
amazing.
You know, I owe it to them. And,
yeah.
8 years.
So, yeah, now that's, of course, comedy. And then again, you do a lot of these Law and Orders. And then you do John Carter. Then you do The Mentalist, American Horror Story, Anger Management, Roswell, Castle, Red Sleep, The Mindy Project. See, you're going back and forth. I don't have to tell you, but you're going drama, comedy, The Odd Couple. And then you're on Marin. And you play a reoccurring role there as Jerry.
Yeah, Jerry with a G.
Jerry with a G.
Yeah, I was his AA sponsor. And Jerry, instead of drinking, is constantly eating. So I had scenes where I had would be eating, stuffing Costco cake and cookies. And, you know, and it was great because he was wonderful to work with. But they let me do some, in some of the scenes, kind of open it up and do some improv stuff with it. And it was, I just loved that character. It was so.
But don't you have to be careful on set if you have to eat? Because you know you have to be consistent and, you know, repeat the actions.
Yes.
And you don't want to eat too much because you'll get sick, literally.
Right. But... You know, sometimes you just have to eat the cake.
You're a fucking pro, man.
Sometimes there's no way around it. If you're doing a scene, then you can kind of get away with using the spit bucket.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
when
if
you're
you
doing
have
that,
to use, yeah.
Yeah. There was no spit bucket on that because...
You're in front of a live audience.
No, it was on film.
Oh, okay.
But still... The scene would go on for 3 minutes. So, you know, I was constantly stuffing cookies and eating food, so I couldn't spit it out. So I ate it. It was a sacrifice.
Have you been on Mark's show on WTF? Why hasn't he had you on that show?
I don't know. He doesn't call. He doesn't write.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Well, I'm just saying, because you're so interesting and you have such a rich history, I would think that he would love to sit down with you.
You know, he's off doing other things and, you know, out of sight, out of mind, I guess.
Yeah, you know, he was in Joker.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
It's good. It's real good. Joaquin's going to win the Academy Award.
Mm.
I'm not the first one to say that. So anyway, then you go on, you do Green Book, which is unbelievable. You played the owner of the Copacabana.
Yes.
That's an Academy Award winning film and you're in it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It was stunning. Yeah.
And then I met you recently on 7 Days to Vegas, which was with Vince Van Patten and Danny Pardo, which have both been on the show. And you play Angry Jim.
Right. And Tom Alper and Vince Van Patten.
Yes.
Wrote the story.
Steve Alper.
Oh, Steve, sorry.
Yes, they're brothers.
Yes, and Steve Alper.
Exactly. Anyway, so you have a tremendous history, and I can't wait to hear your story about special skills. But before we get to Don's story, I wanted to remind you guys to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Storyworthy, and check out StoryworthyPodcast.com. Why not? There's a little pop-up, and you can join my mailing list. Oh, yes, that will be fun, Christine. Yes, I would love to do that. I'm going to head right over. Oh, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. And also, you guys, check out screwedupstories.com, my other podcast. A lot of fun over there with Rachel O'Brien on Westwood One podcast. Screwedupstories.com. Check it out. All right, you guys, he's here right now. Don Stark, you've heard the man. As you know, and as we've talked about, he's a veteran Hollywood actor who has spent his career transitioning from comedy to drama and back again. You've done so much work, and we just went through your whole resume pretty much, so I don't want to go back through it again, but I do want to say your versatility is stunning, and I'm so happy that you are here with me right now. So folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for Don Stark.
Well, thank you for having me on, Christine. I'm excited to be here, and thank you for the kind words. I have been a professional actor now for 46 years, and that is worth, boy, Zoloft, Valium, whatever you can take, Silver, Patron, straight up. I wish I was a drinker or could take drugs, but I just eat, so that's my vice. Doing this for as long as I have, especially when you're a younger actor, you just want an audition. You want an audition, you don't care what it is, and you are going to take that audition no matter what it calls for. And so sometimes they'll say, do you ride horseback? Of course. Okay? If they ask you if you could do it, you say yes. It doesn't matter if you know how to do it. You know, first you got to get the job. Then if you get the job, then they'll find out whether you can do it or not. And you audition, you get the job, you'll go out. You'll find somebody to teach you.
Figure it out.
Right. You find somebody to teach you how to do it. Do you ride a horse? Yeah. What style? Western and English. Some steeple. Chasing. And do you scuba dive? Oh, yes. Yes, I do, as a matter of fact. Wow. Do you surf? Surfing? I love surfing, and I am actually, I'm an expert. I took an amateur competition in Maui, and do you play baseball? Yes. You know, do you play football? Yes. You know, do you sing? Yes, I do. I am an excellent singer. So I had done a police story, which was with David Cassidy, and it was a 2-hour show. And it was great. An amazing director, Corey Allen, who was an actor. He was in Rebel Without a Cause and just fantastic actor. So I had worked with these people, and then they were going to do a TV series with David Cassidy playing this undercover cop. And so there were roles for other undercover cops.
Right.
And so they asked, before you came in, do you ride a motorcycle? And what do I say? I say, why, yes. Yes, I do ride a motorcycle. I am an expert at riding a motorcycle. So I'm at Warner Brothers, and I'm upstairs out on this balcony, and all these actors, and I've got my sides, my script that I'm going to be auditioning for, and I'm waiting, and people go in. All of a sudden, guy comes out, and he says, Don, and I said, yeah. And he said, oh, you can leave your script. And I'm now, it's like, okay. He says, you ride a motorcycle, right? Why, yes, I do. What kind of bike do you ride? A Honda? A Honda 250. A Honda 250. He says, good, we've got one downstairs in the parking lot, and we just want to see that you're comfortable just riding in the parking lot, just so that we know that, you know, you're able to ride the motorcycle. Well, at this point, the sweat is coming off of me like Albert Brooks in Broadcast News. I can't even grip anything because my hands are sweating, my pits are sweating, and the water's coming off my ass like a flume ride. It's like Splash Mountain. So I go to the parking lot, and the motorcycle is kind of, it's a narrow, two narrow aisles. And then there's cars to the left of me. And so I get on the motorcycle, and I knew, basically, you know, I knew about the gears. I knew how to, you know, to start it. So I kickstart the thing, and then I let out the clutch, and I didn't have enough gas, and it kills it. And so now it's like, he says, it's okay, don't worry about it. Well, this time, I don't want to stall it. So I kickstart it, I let out the clutch, and I hit the gas, and the motorcycle immediately, I drive into the back of a Volvo. And now my hand is locked on to the gas, and the wheel, I'm now underneath the car with the back wheel spinning back and forth, and I'm shaking, and I can't let go, and it's the guy's motorcycle, and he's yelling, what the fuck are you doing? I thought you said you could ride. And I'm hyperventilating. He grabs my hand off of the gas, and I'm hyperventilating, and I sit on this bumper of this car that I just hit, who probably was some big producer and, you know, never work in this town again. And I looked up at him and I said, can I try it again? And he said, no, you can't try it again. You fucked up my bike. So now I go back upstairs and I've got my script. And one by one, everybody is leaving. I am now sitting on the deck for 15 minutes by myself. I don't know. Now, I'm a young actor. I'm terrified. Dear God, I lied. I'm never going to work in this town again. And 15 minutes go by. I don't know at this point. Are they expecting me just to go home? Or should I stay there? And I am just, I don't know what to do. I'm paralyzed. The casting director comes out and she says, Don, will you take a look at this other role? You don't ride quite well enough for this part. With a straight face, and I looked up. I didn't know what to do. I actually looked at the other role. I went in, read the other role. They offered me the part, and I ended up turning it down. I didn't do it. I was so embarrassed by everything that went on. But I thought, man, I'm never going to work again. I mean, that 15 minutes up there, I would have jumped off the roof, but I figured I'd probably hit the same fucking Volvo. And, it was Clint Eastwood's office building. And yeah. I thought, oh, great, you know.
Yeah. So wait a minute. Were you hurt, the first thing? Were you hurt at all?
Just my ego.
But did you rip up your pants or like when you skidded?
No.
And did you have a helmet on?
No.
So you don't even have a helmet on.
But I wear a helmet while I'm sitting on the couch now, just in case.
Go wait a minute. Seriously, you don't have a helmet on.
No.
You wrecked the bike. You hit the car. Now, at that juncture, why didn't you just get in your car and go home? I mean, they said go back upstairs.
They didn't say, but I just went back upstairs because I didn't know what else to do. I'm a young actor. I don't, you know, I'm not going to just leave on my own.
Yeah, because you're thinking they still want me to read their sides.
I think they've left already.
Oh.
After 15 minutes, and there's nobody out there.
Why were all the actors leaving? Were they getting called down to ride the bike?
They were getting called to audition, and then when they were done, they left.
I see.
So I was the only one that was left. There was nobody coming out there.
Did you say to anybody else in the waiting room, like, you guys, I had to ride a bike. I had to drive a motorcycle.
No, nothing.
Give them a heads up.
Well, because there were a lot of different roles that people were reading for, so it wasn't the same thing.
Yeah.
And I was so mortified, I didn't want to admit to anyone, let alone myself, but technically, I rode that thing for about 0.4 seconds. I rode that bitch.
Yeah. It was steady for a minute. If you had let off the gas.
If that parked car had not come out of nowhere and hit me, I would have been absolutely fine.
So why did you turn it down? I mean, I heard what you said. You were just mortified, but still it was a role.
I don't know. I think, you know, when you're young, you're a moron. And so, you know, now I'm a moron, but I know I'm a moron. So that doesn't make me less of a moron, but there
did,
you go.
Did you tell anybody? Did you tell anybody about this after it was done?
Oh,
or were you like,
hell no.
When's the first time you told the story?
Maybe years later to family.
Yeah.
But even then it was, you know, it was in the vault.
And did you continue lying about your special skills?
Oh, yes, of course.
But not about motorcycle riding.
Well, if I had had a good part, I would have. Because now I've already beaten that thing. I could do that in my sleep.
Did you ever see a role and your agent called and said, "Hey, Don, take a look at this," or did you ever see a role and say, "No, no, 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 no. That's just not for me.
I'm an actor, so the answer to that is no.
But seriously, if it was extreme nudity, or if it was spending a large portion of time in, you know, Siberia, or what would be a reason why you might say no?
Well, I don't think there's any danger of anybody asking me to do nudity because I don't think that's going to bring the box office in. I would not be comfortable with that. I actually did a job where I had to be in a tutu and dance a ballet, and that was frightening.
What was that? What was the role?
It was called C Street, and I played the super of an apartment building. It was like a takeoff on, you know, Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. and all the intrigue. And so I was Russian super.
Wow.
And had to do Nutcracker Suite, because when I was little boy, my father, he did not allow me to dance. So now I had to find my inner ballerina.
Wow, that's amazing.
So
that is stunning. Don, when you learn accents like that, what are the resources you go to?
Sometimes I'll go, there's some, you know, that I already know, like, you know, Boston, Russian, Southern,
Italian.
New Orleans, Italian, you know, New York, upper and lower, you know, depending on upscale and
street
more guys
talk.
Like this.
Yeah.
Chicago, which, you know, that's what I did, you know, on that 70s show, because it took place in Wisconsin, which is that same accent. So I went in there and I see these shows, or Philadelphia, I go over here and, you know.
Do Philadelphia, Philadelphia might be my least favorite accent. I mean, there's a lot of accents I don't care for, but Philadelphia, there's something about it. I'm from Pittsburgh, the other side of the state, so maybe it's a rival thing. But do the Philly. Give me some Philly. Anything.
It's like go over, get a hoagie and a Coke, get a pop, you know, hang out over there. You know, it's very similar to Baltimore kind of accent. But the O's, you know.
It's very lazy.
Ball club. We're going to go over to ball club. And
It's very similar to Pittsburgh accent, actually. However, it has a little New York to it.
I had to do a Pittsburgh one, too, a Berg accent. And so I had worked on that, and I don't remember how I did it at this point, but I learned key words, go onto YouTube and things like that, and I look for resources if it's not something, you know, and New Orleans, you know, Cajun.
That's a tough one, no? Yeah. Cajun?
Yeah.
You, let me hear something there.
You want to go on over there, go to Audubon Park, and you can go over there and you can get a muffalata and go over to Lake Pontchartrain, you know, so talk like that. It almost sounds like Brooklyn a little bit. There's that, you know, accent.
Yeah, but there's so much like... When I hear New Orleans accent, it's almost like they clip words off. Like they don't even finish.
Well, the real Cajun is like, oh, I guarantee you're going to do that. That's a heavy, real Cajun, you know, accent. But New Orleans is not, doesn't sound Southern. It more sounds like, you know, I'm going to go over there and I'm going to go over to Audubon Park and we're going to go over there and, you know, we're going to go down to Bourbon Street and hang out and...
Get a beignet.
Get a beignet, you know.
But isn't there some French in there?
Yes, there's some French, but it does... It's got little twinges. It's just... It's a city accent in the middle of the South. I lived in Baton Rouge. In Baton Rouge, you know, it's a real deep South Southern accent.
Yeah.
And New Orleans, everywhere else, like Lafayette and other places...
They don't have that.
They have more traditional Southern accent.
Where did your brother and sister end up?
My sister lives in Las Vegas, and my brother lives out here.
Well, that's
in,
nice.
Monrovia.
So but they're close.
They're close.
They must be damn proud of you, man.
Oh, well, we're all proud of each other, you know.
But yeah, but you're in terms of becoming an actor, it's so, you know, it's so elusive and not really in the vernacular when you're growing up all over the United States.
Yeah, but look, it looks a lot better until you read the fine print in the brochure.
Which you mean? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, it is... When people ask me, oh, my kid wants to be an actor, you know, say, only do it if you have to. Mm-hmm. If it is the thing that is your passion, that drives you, that is everything to you.
Like you don't have a choice.
And you don't want to do anything else.
Yeah.
But if it's something that you could take or leave.
Yeah.
There's plenty of other things to do in the world to earn a living and not go through constant rejection, because you're rejected even when you don't get an audition. You've been, you know, for something that you feel you're right for, you've been rejected.
Right.
Then you go in for the audition and you don't get it, or all the different machinations of, oh, now they decided the part is now for a woman. Okay.
Yeah. Or we want a black guy. Sorry.
Right. I mean, so it's stuff that has nothing to do with you, but it's you.
Yeah.
If you're a salesman, you can sell vacuums, and if vacuums don't work out, you can go sell cars. When you're an actor, you got only one product. Now, you make that product as flexible as you can. But some people have done a lot better by being one thing. But as an actor, that's not really where the joy comes for me. You know, there are parts that are close to you that kind of hit your sweet spot, that if you were a batter, that's the pitch that you know you can hit out.
Sure, sure.
And then there's other stuff that you do that... you know, that are great and that you're good at. But, you know, there's so many actors out there. And it used to be you'd be in a room with producers and writers, people who could make the decision. Now you're in the room with casting directors on tape. So there's feedback with the casting director. But when you're in the room with the people who can make the decision, you feel the room. You feel whether something's working, not working. You can make these adjustments. And the people, for the most part, who had the power to make the decisions, that's what happened on 7 Days to Vegas. The producers, Vince, Eric Balfour, they were in the room.
Makes a big difference.
And I asked, you know, I said, Vince, is okay, can we... Because there wasn't a lot of stuff at the point written for Angry Jim. But I had kind of gone with it and come up with some ideas that I wanted to expand what was going on to
and
show that
you can make a relationship in the room,
right?
And then they can make the decision, like, you know what, I think I would like to spend 12 hours a day with Don Stark.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, well, they can decide whether not only can you do it, but that they like you,
right? And it's just a whole different thing. And then also today, it's like sometimes you go in and you put something down on tape, then you find out, oh, the casting director didn't even send it on,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm well known enough that sometimes it hinders maybe getting a job because I'm recognizable, but I'm not recognizable enough to get offers for jobs.
Interesting.
And so I'm auditioning, and then they have choices, and, you know, you do a great job. I read for something, and it was to play a guy who is in his late 70s. Now, I've done that with makeup.
Yeah, sure. They can age you.
Great audition. And then I put so much work in it. There was 7 pages of straight dialogue. Had it memorized. And then come to find out they hired Bruce Dern. They just offered it to Bruce Dern.
Yeah, yeah. Because they could. He was available, and they just did.
Same thing happened.
Yeah.
I flew to New York on my own dime. At the last minute, my manager said, there's this movie with Liev Schreiber, and there's this role you're right for, but you'd have to be in New York tomorrow. This is at 6 o'clock at night.
Oh, my God.
So I'm on the phone trying to get a flight, trying to get a room, trying to coordinate all this stuff, and now I'm just getting the material, and I fly to New York, and I go and I audition, great audition, probably cost me $5,000 to audition, but I loved the part.
You got it.
No. They offered the part to Ron Perlman.
Oh.
They do this, the game of getting money from foreign distribution. And so they have lists of names of what is going to sell, and that's
in a foreign market. Yeah.
In the foreign market, and that's how they get money to produce the film. And the truth is, I read for this, but I never had an opportunity, which my manager found out after the fact, that they were going to need another name or somebody with
some foreign
value.
Pool. Yeah.
Right. And so, yeah, I was great. And
but it doesn't matter. It's not good enough.
Right. You either do it or you don't do it. I mean, that's the stuff that's heartbreaking, because if I'd known ahead of time, maybe I still say, look, I'll knock them out of the room. But now I know the reality after 46 years.
It's just talent isn't the only thing. There's just so many factors, and it's so nuanced.
Talent's important to have, because you need to have it just for yourself to survive.
It's assumed.
But there's so many. They have a picture of somebody and the person is bald, or the person has long hair and a ponytail. There's not a lot of imagination, and they can find hundreds of actors. Maybe they don't do it as well. Maybe they don't, you know, or they see you in a certain way. They see me as Bob. So they don't know that I could play a hard ass.
Sure.
And I could do a New York accent.
Whatever you need.
And I played a mafia fucking guy, and I'll tear your fucking head off. And I'll shit down your throat.
Yeah.
It's like, or Southern accent. Oh, he can't do a Southern accent. I lived in the South for 8 years.
Jesus, yeah.
So it's always being on Venice Beach with your hat out.
Yeah.
And dancing. After 46 years, I've gotten a film of myself doing all kinds of things, but if you don't go into audition, you don't get the job. So,
yeah, at least it's a chance. It's a crumb of an opportunity.
Right, but then you don't know how much of an opportunity you really have. And, I mean, recently I went in, oh, that's fantastic. One take, it was great audition. Don't change anything. Trust me. I don't know. Maybe my phone isn't working, but... Yeah.
It's sick.
So I think the question is, do I have to fuck to get a job? I'm not saying I do it. I just want to know what my options are.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Listen, 142 roles are showing up on IMDb for you. You're an accomplished actor. And let me ask you, we got to wrap it up. Sure. But are there any shows you are really bummed you didn't get to be on? Like, I look at you and I think, like, how were you not on The Sopranos? Or were you?
No, I wasn't. And that is a... That's a big one, you know, for me.
Yeah.
There are just so many shows that, but I would say The Sopranos is.
What about? Did you ever want to do a period piece like Deadwood?
Oh yeah,
I had actually worked with
David Milch. Oh. I did three different roles on NYPD Blue, and then I did Brooklyn South, which was his show, and Jessica Alba played my daughter. I think it was one of the first things she did.
Wow.
And that was quite an experience. David Milch was...
Genius.
Oh,
genius.
Just, you know, brilliant and creative, and talk about being on the edge of your seat, because you wouldn't get material until... This is when faxes were in. I'd lay by the floorboard of the fax machine and then get these scenes. You'd go in, you'd rehearse it, you go into makeup, and then they come back and they give you another set of lines. He changed it. Oh. And then when you went onto the set, it was more like a pickup football game where you say, okay, you're going to go up and then cut to your left. Okay, you're going to go down, do a streak like that. It was like that.
Wow.
And everything changed, and the script supervisor is writing all this shit down. You're completely panicked out of your mind, and you just roll with it. But he has his sense of writing and his rhythm.
Yeah.
That if you get his rhythm, you can do it. I've seen actors that didn't have the rhythm.
Yeah.
And it ate them alive.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow.
But
wow.
Brilliant. That was.
He's so eclectic.
Yeah.
All right. Where can we find you? Where's the best place?
Don Stark 70.
We're going to find you there.
Whatever.
I got you.
Freeway close, and operators are standing by.
You guys follow me over there as well at Storyworthy. Listen, you guys, I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Head over to my Patreon page and help me out, because you know I have sponsors from time to time, but they come and they go, and you guys are constant and you're always with me. Head over to Patreon, check it out. I've got different tiers going on, including ones I give you all sorts of free live shows, including Story Smash, and also I will teach you to write your story. And you know how badly you want to do that. Yeah, you do. All right, you guys, I want to thank Don Stark one more time. Thank you so much. Great story, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.